Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life and everything in between. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. That's true, you know, it is. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. Speaking of best-selling authors, we've got a great interview up there right now. Conversation I had with Nick Bantock, who's the author of the Griffin and Sabine series, a unique kind of book. Artist, author, creative guy. What an interesting fellow. Such a great perspective on creativity. And well, I can't recommend that interview enough. That's up now on authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. If you want to, you can learn more about the PNWA at pnwa.org. We host a great writers conference every year here in the Seattle area, the Great Northwest. And well, it's going to be another good one this year. At the end of July, the last weekend in July, I'll be teaching a masterclass on the memoir, and also be sitting on a panel there talking about the memoir. I do love the memoir. And there'll be Bob Degoni's doing a masterclass. Donald Moss is doing there's all kinds of great classes and agents and editors galore. Check it out at pnwa.org. So speaking of memoir, today's guest, Linda Hubbard, is a memoirist. Well, she's an artist, writer, and entrepreneur. And her art has been displayed throughout the U.S. and Canada. She runs a successful market research firm down there in sweltering Southern California, and has also written the ebook Know Before You Go, Marketing Basics for Any Business. But we'll be talking about her memoir, recently released memoir, Loving Dangerously, Journey to Nepal. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Bill. I'm very happy to be here. I wanted to share everything that I can with you.
Good. Don't hold back, Linda. Just give it all to me. Every bit of it.
Okay.
So this memoir, Loving Dangerously, Journey to Nepal, is about a period in your life back in the 1970s. You're a young woman, and things had gone awry romantically for you. Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Very devastating. Basically, I had to do something, and I thought, okay, the best thing to do is search for travel, actually. I decided to accept the position over in an art college in London because I got a scholarship, and I decided to go travel. And that really was the reason, was just change of location, change of lifestyle, and being able to just search out, maybe overcome everything that I had experienced and find a more spiritual way to handle my life.
So, devastating. Use the word devastating.
Yeah.
Could you talk a bit about what was devastating? What happened?
Well, I had a boyfriend when I was quite young, and I got pregnant, and he and his mother decided to refuse the child, and I was so innocent. I thought, okay, yeah, he'll just ask me to marry him, and we'll have whatever. And, you know, very young.
Very young.
And they said no, and then my parents were a little bit displeased, and I basically gave birth to the child and had to give it up for adoption.
Ooh. How young were you?
I was like 17, by that 16 and 17.
Wow. And do you think, were you kind of young emotionally too at that point?
I was. I was so, what my daughters call me, very trusting and very innocent. And that's what it was like in the 70s. It was a wild time too. I mean, there was drugs, rock and roll, the whole thing. But I was devastated by it, and I decided the only way to do it is to just travel and you know, concentrate on my painting, my art, etc.
I love the memoir, Linda. I love it. I think is such a great form. I think this, I think it's such a, I think it's literary fiction's sort of spiritual cousin, you know? And I teach it and, I write it. And I'm most interested in understanding for, cause every memoir is about, coming out of pain, coming out of some place of misunderstanding about yourself and your strength and your value and what life is and so on.
That's
and
right.
So how would you describe your confusion when you set off on the, you know, where you left from? What did you think about yourself? What did that experience leave you believing about life that was so painful for you, so devastating? What was the story Linda was telling herself?
It was the story that my mom would and my dad lived, you know, get married, have kids young, and stay together
right.
forever. And that's what it was like over there. And I just thought that was going to happen with me.
Then
I was an artist, though, since a little girl. Mm-hmm. I was always painting and drawing and sketching something. And I sold a lot of stuff, too. I would go to the parks.
Wow.
And I would start sketching people for $25, you know. And
uh-huh.
I made money even when I was a kid. So
wow.
I thought art is the way. So when I was really down, and I usually had a very positive view of life, you know, I thought it was, but I didn't want it to be unrealistic. And so I knew that I had to travel. I had to see what else was in the world. When you're just in one place and you don't see what's out there, You can have a distorted view of what's, you know, what life is. And I wanted to talk to more people, see more people, see more cultures, and really immerse myself in the whole experience.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you started out with one idea of what happiness looked like. You had implanted in your mind this sort of Ward and June Cleaver concept, which is a perfectly nice I sort of lived it to some degree myself with my wife. It's a perfectly nice concept, and suddenly that was pulled out from you. And but you know what a great gift. Now you got to go find out what it actually is. So now you went on a journey to say, well, what is happiness? What is it really if it's not that?
And I thought, well, happiness is, you know, it's not, and I found out it was not just a man. Although I met a boyfriend in England, it wasn't just a man. It was something that I had inside me. And that whole adventure of traveling and all of the different stops along the way, the danger, which I almost got molested in a dark cab in Lyon in France. And, and how I overcame things and what I did and how I kept going no matter what was really, really my strong suit, because I just had an overwhelming feeling that I would find my answers eventually, and I just had to keep looking, which actually did occur in the end.
Do you think
met the llama.
You met the llama?
Yes, I met the llama. I was, when I went into Nepal, because I could draw and paint, I got asked by a patron of the arts that owned a big place in Kathmandu, and he wanted me to paint and illustrate his book on Nepal. He was from Austria, Hans Georg Baer. And basically, I met everyone through him, the cousin of the king of Nepal, the head lama, who is straight from Tibet. He was one of the teachers of the Dalai Lama. He was a really revered person, and his young, the lama that translated, because he could speak English, was really kind. They were very kind, and they had me come over there, and actually they chanted for me a whole night, and it was like this most incredible experience. And I talk about it in the book. I really describe it all and what happened. And then afterwards he said to me, you know, well, the young lama translated, because he said, the lama said that you are not suited for chanting for 20 years to reach nirvana. You will find your answer in the West, and you will find it when you get home. And sure enough, when I went back to Toronto, anyhow, it's a long story, but it becomes very short and sweet. And I was so happy to finally find an answer that I could actually use in my life and get back my love of life. I got back my love of life and my love of people and everything that entails.
You know, it strikes me that when a young woman is setting off in a big wild world by herself,
yep.
and if she
yep.
is the way you describe yourself as being innocent and very open to the world, which I think is a wonderful quality that I suspect you have hung on to, I would think the challenge would be to hold on to that quality while you navigate a world that is not always so innocent. How do you
exactly.
remain open to people while threats exist, of course, when you're not protected by others? How did you hold on to that?
Well, you know, I met so many nice people along the way. There were other students traveling. There was the patron of the arts who put me up in his beautiful house. He had rooms for all of the artists that worked for him. And basically, I had a lot of friends that I met along the way, whether it was France, England, Greece, then over in India. And basically, I joined up with other people that seemed to be of like mind, and they too were searching for something. And that helped a lot. So I never really felt totally alone, although I was totally up by myself when I went into Kathmandu.
Right.
Totally by
and
myself
so,
there.
And you were by yourself then, but you managed to find friends because they're sort of everywhere if you know how to look, aren't they?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was open to it. You know, I mean, just, you know, what was the entree is that I was an artist. So I could take out a sketch pad and draw someone just looking at exactly how they were. And they go,
right.
Oh, my God. You know, that's how I met the head Gurkha, the Gurkha warrior up in the hills. And he wanted my portrait, and he traded for one of his older big sabers. I mean, he had a big one of those rounded. Yeah, I have it here today as we speak. But basically, yeah, all those people that I met were, I mean, fascinating people. And I learned the history of the Gurkhas, but and also of the Lamas, and also of the people of Nepal. You know, they had that devastating earthquake. I found out some of the people that I know there, you know, they no longer had a house.
Right.
So anyhow, yeah.
So the book is described as a spiritual journey. That is a term, I think, that gets a lot of use. And although I think it is an accurate description of what most people are going through, it gets used so much, I think we stop hearing those two words when they're lumped together. And so what does that mean to you? What is a spiritual journey? How would you describe that for you in your experience?
Okay. It's separate from the physical journey of actually traveling. It's what's mm-hmm. going on in your emotions, in your mind, and all the pictures, et cetera, that you actually mentally have. And basically that journey is you're searching for something, and sometimes you recognize it and sometimes you don't. So that kind of spiritual where you know, I believe that we're all spiritual beings. We're not just a hunk of meat. So that's the key.
It is. It is. And what you just described, see, I think that's what the spiritual journey is. You said you contrasted two ideas. We're not just hunks of meat. We're spiritual beings. And it seems to me the spiritual journey is a journey towards a shift in perception. In other words,
perception,
you take the
yeah.
physical journey to see the world. It's the same world physically, and yet you see it differently. You see it with a different perception, and that can change what you're seeing. As for me, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think for a lot of people, because I've had a lot of good reactions from the book that people have seen, have told me their story, and they, too, had some spiritual journey that they took that helped them out of a really hard time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Good. Well, so let's talk about the book, the writing of the book. So I always find memoir interesting in that you have the experience, you lived the story, mm-hmm. that you wrote. I'm sure you told people about it at different times. You told different stories from that time. But then you sat down to write it. And mm-hmm. what did you discover about that story or yourself while you were writing it that was different than what you thought you knew when you lived it?
Oh, it was so interesting because I actually relived it as I was writing it, because I had a journal,
yeah.
and I had all the photographs, and I had all the paintings. So I had
yeah.
the pictures and the words right there in front of me, and I was pretty much reliving it and seeing every person I met, and
yeah.
You know, Hans Dirk Bear and the llama and everything that happened. I would basically, and I had to cut the book down to so it was not long, so long. So it was hard.
Yeah.
That was editing was the hardest thing for me. But
it was.
Just writing it, I just wrote it because I've been writing as a market researcher. I've written so many articles, and I know, you know, that my even in high school and in college, I know how to outline. I know how a story should evolve and the arc and all of that. And I had a girlfriend that actually is she has a workshop teaching writing, and she gave me some books on it and some help on it. But I just wrote. You know, I think you learn to write by writing it and really putting
yeah.
your the love of writing into that book, because I wanted to make it so that it communicated to everybody. And that's the key.
That's
does
the
it
goal.
Communicate or not?
Yeah. And it's a tricky thing, Linda, because, of course, in the end, you don't know what other people are going to make of it. You know what you think of it. And you have to have this, there has to be this inner agreement that you think you've communicated what you wanted to communicate, because you can't get into the mind of every person who's ever going to read that book, you know?
Exactly.
You can't know. So you have to get comfortable with that level of not knowing that, but knowing what you can know, what you
exactly.
can know. You know.
I know, and I did test it out because I'm in market research. So I gave it to some 18-year-olds, and I gave the book to 20, you know, college girls, and then to
uh-huh.
older women, you know, in their 50s and 60s, grandmothers, because I'm writing the book to my granddaughter, Layla,
right.
who's 2.5 now, and she is beautiful. But basically wanted her, when she gets to be 13, 14, she can read this book of what her grandma really went through. And it's, you know, maybe it makes a difference or gives her some insight, etc. But, you know, when I asked people about it, each one of those age groups, they all loved it, but in their own way. Like one thought,
that's
wow,
right.
you just went trekking with a pair of sandals and a long Indian skirt, and you went by yourself up in the hills in the Himalayas. And then someone else thought it was so great that I met all these guys along the way. Another one else... You know, and my boyfriend was an English philosophy professor. He became later, but basically, I had all these different reactions, but each one
yeah.
of them liked it. So I realized it was more of an adventure, love story, traveled dangerously, and overcoming things to find a spiritual path in your life. That it was, you know, it's so many things. And I
yeah.
realized someone's going to pick out one of those things, and that's what they're going to really like, or maybe a couple of them. But at least I
yeah.
I didn't even realize it when I wrote it. You know how you write, and the writing just takes over, and you're just pretty much in that moment of writing
yeah.
about that, and you're seeing it in your mind, and you're putting it down on paper, and you want to describe it really well, and you want to have the words communicate, and that's all you're thinking about. So afterwards, then I start thinking, well, I wonder how anybody's going to react to it.
That's,
luckily,
you know,
it was
this
after
is,
I finished.
That's, you know, it's funny. This is what you just described is exactly what I teach my students, which is that at best, if things are going well, you just sink into the story you're telling and you don't think at all about the rest of the world. It's only after you write that you start asking questions like, well, geez, I wonder what the people who are reading it are going to think. And of course you don't know. And what was interesting about your description, and I think this is absolutely true, and I think it's challenging even for memoirists to understand, because you're writing about your life and this is your story and all of that. But everybody who's reading it is reading it through the prism of their own life and their own
yep.
curiosity and what they're
yep.
interested in. And so what they read is, each person is in a sense reading a different book. And they're not even reading the same book that you wrote, honestly, because what you wrote was based on your experience of writing it. And what they read is filled in with so many details that you didn't include in there, but their imaginations that filled in. And so it's a very peculiar experience, the sharing of our work, because everyone's experience is so private and so personal and so unique to them. You know, you got to just give it away.
Yeah, that is so true. Very true.
Yeah.
And I found that out afterwards because I do market research too. I run a company. So you have to, we ask and survey and research how people think about something. And when I did that on my own book, I was really surprised.
You
know, they rated it 5, but each one of them said something totally different than the other person, what they liked in the book. Oh, my goodness.
So that's interesting. So while you were writing, you were able to shut off your market research mind. The market researcher, she just sat down and let the artist take over.
That's right. Well, I'm used to that because as a painter, I've started doing that since I was in grade school.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
and
that took over.
Oh, interesting. And so you can separate those two skills, because market research is all about asking people, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? What do you
think? Exactly.
And the artist
is
all about, what do I think? Yeah, and then analyzing it.
Yeah, so one's very analytical and the other one is very creative. And I was always so curious, I pretty much incorporated both things in my life.
Yeah, but in which do you have a preference for one, or do you love them both equally?
Pretty equally. I love the creativity in writing because I have 2 more books coming out, but I love what I'm doing in research because everything's different. I have clients from, high-tech to low-tech to a new entrepreneur with a new product or whatever, and it's interesting to me to see what people think of different things and then analyze it so that they can put together a marketing plan and program that will work for them, and that's what we do. So that to me helps. I've helped over 20 years is probably hundreds of businesses to be able to find their way in the labyrinth of all the options there are out there for where do I put my ads, or do I do ads, do I do internet, do I do traditional marketing, all of those things. People have so many confusions. So I try to, limit the confusion and help them. I think it's all about people. Yeah.
It's all about people. The marketing is all about people.
Yep.
Do you
like
people?
I love people.
Good.
I thought that maybe I wouldn't after my experience when I was really young. I thought, well, my parents kind of disowned me. And my boyfriend, I thought he loved me. I'm thinking, maybe people aren't so good after all. But I gained the love of people again.
That's awesome. And so you mentioned that you have 2 new books coming out. Now, were these books inspired by the writing of Loving Dangerously, or were they very separate sorts of projects?
It's pretty separate, although the third book is a fiction book, and the characters I developed with a friend of mine. And it's he's really good at dialogue. He used to write comedy for Jay Leno and various people like that. And he did the dialogue on it. But I did the whole, I had the whole concept and wrote the rest of it. But basically, those are different than, because market research is like my hat write-up of what I would do for, and I even have templates. They could just rip out those questions and use them for any kind of survey they want, because there's 50 different surveys you can do. But basically, they can just use that book as a guide, so it helps them, get a little bit of information that then help them in their marketing, basically what to do.
Loving Dangerously has been out for, I think less than a year, but out for a little while. You've had time to do some promotion on that and do some interviews. And I assume you may have gone around to bookstores or some locations where you could give readings and meet with readers. Have you done those types of events yet?
A little bit. I'm kind of a homebody these days just because of the business, but I have gotten it. It's in Barnes & Noble. Of course, it's on Amazon, and then my website, lovingdangerouslythebook.com. They even get a free gift of all this data on Nepal with pictures and the kinds of food and travel and the Gurkhas and all that. So that's a free gift that I give with, I thought they might want to know about Nepal since the last half of the book is all about Nepal. And a lot of people don't know.
And that's on your website. That's on your website. And so what, as you've met the have you met some of your readers and gotten to talk to them about their experience of the book, aside from the people you did the market research on?
Yes, yes. A lot of people have emailed me and said, thanks for writing this. And makes me, several said, it makes me want to write my memoir now. So I thought that was kind of good. You know, now I'm going to brave the, you know, exactly. Because I'm very honest in the book. I mean, I don't pull any punches. When there was one of the boyfriends that I had along the way, you know, convinced me I should shoot this stuff up. And I was stupid enough and naive enough to do it. And then I almost OD'd, and he was like white as a ghost. And I come out of it, and I go, I'm not doing this ever again. And I left him, of course. But, you know, you have an experience like that, and you think you're safe because you've got a friend. But you realize that some of these guys are, you know, drugs are such a pull that they really can't control it.
Yeah.
And I didn't want any part of that.
You know, you find your safety when you learn how to listen to your own guidance faithfully. You know, I think everybody has got absolutely flawless inner guidance, but we choose to ignore it much of the time. And when you learn to pay attention to it, I think it will always steer you clear of what we call danger, I think. Certainly has in my life.
Yeah, that is true.
When I've chosen to listen to it, I have ignored it often to my own peril. Well, so Linda, we have just a couple minutes left.
Sure.
I have one more question for you. One more. And what I'd like you to do is finish this sentence for me. You ready?
Yep.
All right. I knew you would be. Okay. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
Always be curious and keep thinking creatively.
Always be curious. Always be. Yes. You know, I like that answer, Linda, because I do think curiosity is our portal to intelligence.
Yeah.
Our curiosity is what connects us to intelligence, what connects us to it. And always think creatively. So you feel that the writing the book really reinforced that for you. Because I'm sure you're
absolutely
a very creative person already, obviously.
My mom was a teacher. She actually had dictionaries open for me and encyclopedias and all that. So I was always curious.
Hold on a second. I have All right. Sorry.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead. And so she always had encyclopedias open for you and
dictionaries open for me to look something up if I didn't understand it. So I always was so curious. That's why, you know, I had a lot, you know, I had no problem getting through school or college, but also I went into the creative arts.
Yeah. Well, that, don't worry, someone's trying to call me, but I'm going to ignore it. Well, Linda, thank you so much. This has been a fabulous conversation, and best of luck. It's Dangerous Journey, Loving Dangerously, Journey to Nepal. Available where all fine books are sold.
And also lovingdangerouslythebook.com for my website for the free booklet on Nepal. Yeah. Thank you so much. I had fun.
Thank you. Enjoy. All right. Well, everybody, speaking of marketing, I will be doing next week's episode will be on fearless marketing. I want to thank my silent but loyal co-producer, Jeffrey Pretty. And thank you all. Remember, be curious. And do what you love.